This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, David. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling nostalgic.
Sentimental. Nostalgic. Yeah, 5 years ago, today, as we pod, from Landon Donovan's goal, the goal, Rog, called by Ian Dark.
When he was just Ian Dark.
Yeah,
he was
before not yet, he wasn't knighted yet.
He was not yet Sir Ian.
Yeah.
You could not write a script like this. We didn't even know what go, he put the word go.
Yeah.
And go.
Yeah.
And USA together. He had that, that poetic, it was a magical moment. Such a formative moment for so many Americans. Moment they started to fall in love with football and Landon and the passionate poetry of Sir Ian. At Mr. Film Geek tweeted us, one of many, who said, that moment was the moment I gave up caring about every other sport. At the Kid Pow tweeted us and said, the moon landing of soccer moments in this country, you'll never forget where you were when it happened. Which I love. I'm just living a lot of this time last year kind of stuff, David. Jermaine Jones's net ripper against Portugal.
God, that was it. We were in Brazil this time last year.
Yeah, a year ago yesterday.
Yeah.
I find it all very, it's a lot of nipple tingling.
Yeah, well, the tapeworms finally cleared up from our time down in Rio, Roger.
But I think it was Inside Out that just made me so sentimental this week. Have you seen that?
I didn't see it, but I hear it's meant to be amazing.
Sobbed.
Rog. You did. You sobbed. Did you see it on a plane?
No, in a theatre. Bim bom.
And you
back.
Sobbed.
Come
you back. Sobbed the whole
Bim
time.
Bom. Let's not talk about that.
Okay.
It's going to make my bottom lip turn. I want to hear about your golf experience, David. The US Open.
US Open. I thought.
Final hours. Tighter than an Arsenal jersey.
Let me tell you something. Been a lot of criticism of this US Open. The players very unhappy with the state of the greens. A lot of viewers, it seems. Well, not necessarily viewers. It seems a lot of the critics very unhappy with Fox's coverage. But I got to tell you, I thought that the US Open coverage was absolutely fantastic. I thought this was a great US Open. Jordan Spieth, future bald, won it all, Rog.
Yeah, he's golf's Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
I just, at the end, Evo.
What, is he golf's Jordan Morris? Well, his name is Jordan.
Yeah.
But he's firmly
he's young.
Yeah.
And he's unstoppable.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely unstoppable. Him and Rory have a real rivalry now, golf's number one and two.
What do you think about Dustin Johnson wandoing?
Yeah, well, he's wandoed before, Rod. He was in a position to win the British Open, in a position to win the PGA at Whistling Straits, and I think he was in contention at Pebble as well, and he's folded every single time.
Couldn't happen to a nicer fella. As Vince Vaughn would say, True Detective style, never do anything out of hunger, not even eating. Especially putting. Tell you what I found amazing, David. I want to hear you talk about Tiger Woods claps.
Yeah.
15 years ago to the day, Woods won the United States Open by 15 strokes. On Thursday, he was trailing the leaders by 15 strokes.
Yeah.
Watching him humbled, how do you experience that?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And I mean, look, golf is one of those games. We've seen a lot of players fall apart very, very quickly from the top of golf. And we've seen some of those players, by the way, fall apart and then come back and come and do it again. I'm not sure that this can possibly happen for Tiger. It is extraordinary. There is something almost, it's a little bit like watching a car crash. I don't feel great. I'm not someone who enjoys watching Tiger play really badly on television. It's
playing so badly that he laughs at his own cock-up.
Yeah, and I wasn't really a huge Tiger fan ever. I never really enjoyed him when he was winning. He didn't have enough grace for me as a golfer. But I don't enjoy watching him be very, very poor.
Watching him now makes me believe that one day even Luis Suarez will face karma, David.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, maybe. Let's talk about more important stuff.
Yeah.
The Treasury. Big announcement this week. There's going to be a woman on the $10 bill starting in 2020.
But why are we getting rid of Hamilton? I like Hamilton. Andrew Jackson.
He's not
surely
hitting anymore.
It's Jackson is who we should be getting rid of.
I don't have a position. I love
you
all
don't have
presidents.
A position, really?
Yeah, apart from Nixon.
Yeah. Well, he's not on anything.
He's on a stamp. That's America, by the way. I remember when I came to America, Nixon died. And they released a stamp. And I thought, what a country. What country where you can mythologize people instantly, mm-hmm. very quickly after their passing? Yeah. Wasn't that bad? Put them on a stamp. America's amazing. But anyway, they've asked for public input.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I mean, a lot of GFOPs have been ruminating. Who would you put? A lot of Megan Rapinoe love for the $10.
Well, Loretta Lynch, of course, has got to be up there as a candidate.
I think that's who it is. It's got to be Loretta. I put a little list together.
Yeah.
Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
Rebecca Lowe.
Uh-huh.
Tracy Chapman.
Uh-huh.
And then I heard you've got to be dead to be on a banknote.
Yeah, and probably American, which is why Rebecca Lowe doesn't make it.
So it's got to be Dana Plato.
That would be some $10 bill.
America, if you can put Richard Nixon on a stamp...
You can put Dana Plato on the $10 bill.
Other major news about justice in the universe.
Yeah.
Doesn't the world feel a bit different this week to you?
It's warmer.
Ginger emoji.
Oh, good.
Redheads rejoice. Yeah. Ginger people have their own emoji.
Free at last.
Google
Free
Play last. Store on Android. 16 characters released, including Ron Weasley and Conan O'Brien. After this global backlash to Apple's emoji. Not having any gingies at all. I feel light, Dave. I feel free.
Do you feel partly responsible for this, Rod?
I don't. It was a team. It was a unified. It was a collective. It was a unification of all people who will fight because first they came for the gingies, Dave.
Yeah.
But I won't stop this fight until there's a Lalas emoji, a Stevie Quinn emoji. Yeah, and a Molly Ringwald emoji, David. They all need to be represented.
Okay, two Molly Ringwald references so far. We're only about 5 minutes in, Rog.
There's four more coming.
Before we begin, Rog, we've got a message.
Yeah, little Liam Baskell.
Oh, Liam.
And his family in Phoenix, Arizona. He's a warrior who's undergone 3 brain surgeries in 35 days.
Wow.
And we are blown away by him and his family, and blown away also by all the GFOPs who rallied to support them via their website, www.gofundme.com/weeman. I mean, their approach to life is unbelievable. We can't imagine the suffering that they're all going through right now, right, David?
Come on, Liam. And thoughts.
We dedicate this pod to you, Liam.
Yep. Only 4 more Molly Ringwald references to go, Liam. okay, we've got a packed show. We're going to break down the US women's 2-0 win over Colombia and their upcoming quarterfinal against China. We delve into the world of Premier League transfer news to discuss Peter Cech's leap to Arsenal and ask whether Sergio Ramos could actually land at Manchester United. And we're joined by the lead host of Fox's World Cup coverage.
An American hero.
Our good friend and future presidential candidate.
Please God.
The great Rob Stone.
Stone of Four Prez, hashtag.
But first, the latest from FIFA land, Rog, where a man who embodies integrity is poised to run for president. Enter the frame, Diego Maradona.
Yeah, he's put it out. He's floating trial balloons that he wants to run for FIFA's presidency.
Yeah.
The one human being in the world, David, mm-hmm. who makes me think, Sepp Blatter, stay. Don't go, mate.
Yeah. Hand of God, Diego Maradona.
It's worse than United Passions, that news, David.
The lowest grossing movie in movie history, mm-hmm. I believe, Rod.
The AV Club wrote, the film has been pulled from US theatres entirely after making $918.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the worst grossing film of all time. You, of course, know, Dave. The 2006 Tom Sizemore, Catherine Heigl thriller, mm-hmm. Zizzix Road.
Oh.
Zyzzyx Road.
Yeah.
Made $30.
Oh, really? And this made more?
It was only in one theatre that day, and it was only for one night.
It wasn't widely
distributed. So this was the lowest grossing film to actually receive limited theatrical distribution.
Wow. It's on pay-per-view. I could get it on my Optimum Cable on demand. And I considered buying it this weekend, and then I fell asleep, I think.
I'd love to watch it. I'm praying that this box office news, Dave, $918, doesn't put the kibosh on United Passions 2.
Oh, yeah, it could be a good one.
We've seen the script.
Yeah.
It's a rollicker. Its working title is United Passions 2, American Ass Kicker. K-I-C-K-A. Pam Grier as Loretta Lynch.
Oh, good. Oh, it's going to be good amazing. Casting. I love that.
A lot of ink spilled on this disastrous run. We should say, The United Passion soundtrack, and no one's written about this. Mm-hmm. It sold really, really well, the soundtrack to the movie. Hmm. Mostly purchased by people under the mistaken belief that let's embezzle the money, buy apartments for our cats is going
to
be on
oh,
there.
Oh, no, 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 no. We're releasing that.
We'll give that one away to you for free, won't we, David?
Yeah. Let's embezzle the money, buy apartments for all of our cats. Let's embezzle the money, buy apartments for all of our cats. Oh, it's a cracker, Rog. It is.
I can't tell you.
Cracker.
I get a head rush after we sing that.
So good.
Perfect segue into...
the football. Rog, let's crack open a Guinness. Careful. Careful. No accidents today. We don't have time for an accident, Rog. Every time you do that, I need to go to the bathroom. Cheers, Rog.
To Alex Morgan and American Glory.
Yes. USA 2, Colombia 0. Rog, American States United gets the job done against a tenacious Las Cafeteras side. After some impressive first half saves, Colombia keeper Catalina Perez, their third choice keeper, Rog, was sent off in the 47th minute for taking down Alex Morgan inside the box. And while Abby Wambach shanked the ensuing penalty. I'm not sure she shanked it. She hit it pretty well. The player advantage proved too much. Alex Morgan scored in the 53rd minute. And then Carly Lloyd, Rod, added a second from the spot to ensure the US advanced to the quarterfinals.
Oh, the 21st anniversary of USA 2, Colombia 1, 1994.
Interesting.
RIP Andres Escobar.
Yeah.
Job done, USA once more. Mm-hmm. But Lord, Lady Andrade... Abby Wambach 2 was excruciating to watch at times, Davey.
Yeah.
So much harder work to watch than it should have been.
Just unsyncopated, the performance, Roger. We'll talk a little bit about it later, but I watched England. The weirdest experience. You watched an England performance earlier in the day. Then you watched the US. And England, not a perfect performance against Norway. They were, like, overrun in the first half. But then they came back with joy. They outpassioned the Norwegians, Roger. They played as a team. They expressed themselves through football, and they seemed released, they seemed free. The US seems so controlled right now. It's just a very odd thing watching a US national team play in this manner.
I mean, before the game, all the talk was about Colombia's brassy PR strategy. Lady Andrade, she of the 2012 Abby Wambach sucker punch leading the attack, and what she perceived American overconfidence. I've got to say, I adore Lord Grantham's Colombian daughter, Lady Andrade. I like her more than I like Lady Sybil, even.
Subplot.
She's got all the bitter put-downs of Lady Mary and the inner strength of Lady Edith. I think she's terrific. Ureli Rincon added, the US do not have the heart we have. And ultimately, Dave, after watching the 90 minutes, she was arguably right.
Yeah.
Thankfully, our other organs worked okay enough for us to squeeze through our spleen, American spleen.
Oh, American spleen in very good health.
American pancreas.
Yeah.
It's the best. So this was a clash between the US, who've never done worse than the semis, and a team that had never made the elimination round before. Paul Carr blew our mind with a pre-game stat. Abby Wambach has 101 more international goals than the entire Colombia roster. 183 goals to 82.
Wow.
And she's nearly matched Colombia's total with her head alone. 77 goals. So it was no surprise when the US made its most confident start of the tournament. They came at Colombia early, and Abby Wambach had a goal etched off for, I guess, overt Wambachism.
Well, it was offside, Rog. It was clearly offside, despite Wambach's protestations after the game.
Oh, it was. And then Colombia came back. They started to assert themselves. Lady dancing on the edge of the area like she was taught to play football by Sergio Farrell himself at the Best Smart says, and what do we say to the god of soft contact? Yes, today. I've got to say, a number of the English ladies talked after their game about how they've texted their coaches to buy Andrade, who's currently playing football in Finland. But hers was a team who'd come ready for hand-to-hand combat. We've talked about, in the Men's World Cup, we talked about how certain teams, Uruguay, Costa Rica, pulling on their national team jersey and feeling the power of the people back in Montevideo or Costa Rica cheering them on.
Yeah.
Think of the motivational power of teams inspired at this tournament to represent and impress their nation, but having to prove themselves to themselves at the same time. Julie Foudy's been talking a lot about this. And before the game, Jair Longman of the New York Times, he's had an amazing World Cup.
Yeah, he's really immersed
himself in the tectonic plates of the women's game. He wrote about the cultural victory the Colombians had achieved in reaching the knockout round and said it may be more important than anything that they'd achieved on the field. He wrote about the macho cultures in Latin America, especially Brazil and Colombia, where they've disdained women who sought out the exertion of kicking a ball. Catalina Perez, the goalkeeper, told him before the game, "Our dreams are bigger than our fears," which is an amazing thing for a footballer to say. And then Yureli Rincon, Colombia's playmaker, said she'd always felt like God's mistake as a girl because she couldn't understand why people look badly on their passion to play football. So that was it, Dave. The US were playing a team who had to prove themselves, plus had hatred of their opponents in general, and I think every one back in particular. And that was an incredibly potent brew for them to face up against.
Yeah, plus they had fantastic ball skills. There were points of the game where they moved the ball around beautifully and the US just couldn't catch them. And they attacked, you know, producer J-Dubs was making this point earlier. They attacked the US in numbers. Megan Rapinoe would get the ball. Three of them would surround her and press her to go and get the ball. And it felt like the US, number one, aren't used to being played like that. And two, I don't have any other expression, so I apologize for having to use this phrase, but they were a bit arsy throughout the whole game, a bit just like unhappy, just unhappy with everyone, miserable with the referee, complaining about every touch. And perhaps this is me not being, you know, and I'm a big supporter of the US Women's National Team, but I'm not looking at it through jingoistic eyes when I watch it. But they didn't play with their sort of a joy and passion. They seemed a little bit, and I know I'm going to get attacked for that, they seem a little bit entitled in terms of the way that they were playing this game and the way they viewed their opposition.
Yeah, I mean, that was an approach to the game, but tactically, they countered Colombia with what Sam Allardyce would witheringly call long ball United. I mean, they were eager to kind of pile drive Abby Wambach through the middle, so desperate to feed her that they, to me, they forgot how many different ways he could actually hurt teams if they thought about it. Watching them, it was like watching when I played EA Sports FIFA against really, really good players online. And the really, really good player lets me be Real Madrid. And then they take like somebody like Sunderland, but then absolutely batter me still. Because even though I've got the better players on paper, they actually really, really have a plan and know what they're doing and can batter me with Wes Brown and Lee Catamole. I mean, that's what it felt like watching this. At Peach Jones tweeted, "It's like watching Manchester United under David Moyes. Nothing but crosses into the box. I'm sure the 40th one
so many crosses
will work." I mean, why is Jill Ellis not tweaking matters? It's so obvious to see what's going wrong with this team. Such a talented number of individuals, but as a collective, I mean, what they are creating is so little.
I think it's clear, and I watched Jill Ellis's post-match interview three times just to sort of figure it out. It's clear that she is a pragmatist. There are certain managers who are, you know, inspirers, certain managers who are, you know, severely sort of tactical, always they're innovators, and there are some who are pragmatists. She is a pragmatist. I think that she is, you know, the coach of these women and the coach of these players, and I think they are a slightly limited squad in terms of their creative output. This is a team that seem to beat teams with their athleticism, with their strength, with their teamwork, less with sort of mind-blowing creativity. And I think she's a pragmatist. I think she honestly regarded that as a good result against a good team and a good performance.
I've got this one theory, David, watching this and watching them tactically and listening to Abby Wambach after the game. It could be that Jill is not in full control of the team. I mean, Abby is so desperate to win this. It's her final
World
Cup.
That's really interesting.
She's had an otherwise stellar career, but the thing that's always dogged this generation of women is the 99ers that they've not won since then. She even took a leave of absence from her league team to prepare for this World Cup, which is an incredibly unorthodox gambit. And you watch LeBron, Jill Ellis could be the David Blatt of this team, and Abby could be the LeBron, apart from she's not scoring the 35.8 points, the 13.3 rebounds, the 8.8 assists per game at crunch time.
No, and the reality is she did not have a great game, culminating in that missed penalty. Yeah. Rog.
20-year-old University of Miami goalkeeper Catalina Perez, third choice for Colombia. So brave in the first half.
Yeah.
And then within 2 minutes of the second, Alex Morgan ran into space, was brought down. Red cards and tears ensued. Perez broke my heart, and not just because I watched Inside Out after the game. She said she dreamed about playing this kind of game over and over in her head thousands of times. And getting a red card, she said heartbreakingly, was never part of her dream. Up stepped Abby Wambach.
Yeah. She missed it by quite a distance, Rod.
Yeah, my great friend John Hawk emailed me to say that Diana Ross took a better penalty in the 1994 World Cup. YouTube that. Yeah. YouTube it. At Merman tweeted us, Wambach dared to Wando. I mean, watching her miss that penalty, David, it was like watching Mickey Rourke at the end of the wrestling. I'm beginning to think Abby is Randy the Ram Robinson.
Yeah.
The only place I get hurt is out there.
Didn't matter. They now were a woman up against the opposition, Rog, and it didn't take long for them to get the advantage.
Well, they were down to 10 players. It's clear the goal was coming. Alex Morgan was the scorer. Funniest part of it all was that the entire Colombian defence and the Colombian goalkeeper were like, she's never going to shoot, is she? She's going to feed it to Abby Wambach.
Yeah.
And all Alex did was defy the Wambach imperative,
yeah,
knock it towards goal, and let the law of the third goalkeeper take effect. It was a very Sunderland-y goal, uh-huh, David.
The Wambach imperative would be an excellent title for a biography
really bad
of Abby Wambach. Yeah, it would be really good. And they go 1-0 up. Colombia tried to come back into the game. Rog played actually some of their best football when they were down.
And then a moment of football broke out.
Yeah.
Klingenberg, playing in Rapino, who was hacked down, second penalty. By the way, Megan there made exactly the kind of run the US need more of, and Klingenberg found her immediately. This time it was Carly Lloyd stepping up. And after the game, Abby dismissed Fox's suggestion she'd had an off day. Very brave reporter with that as the first question. And then she suggested, I punish myself by, quote, letting Carly take the penalty. I mean, she sounded like Ricky Gervais in The English Office.
Yeah.
There's a great episode when an outside facilitator comes in to train the staff, and David Brent's so threatened by the loss of control, he keeps making it clear to his staff, the trainer's working under me. It's my decision. And she then said, I don't know if I was offside for the early goal. I think it was good. There's just a list of things she said. She also suggested the French referee, quote, gave yellow cards to US players that she knew were one card from a suspension. It seems she was purposefully giving those yellows to players she knew were sitting on yellows. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a psychological thing. Who knows? None of this sounds good, David, does it?
Yeah, they seem very unhappy with the referee for the entire game.
The offsides, the turf, the denial. And so Megan and Lauren are now out. Lauren Holiday are now out with yellow card accumulation. I'll say one thing about Abby.
Yeah.
She'd be so much more effective coming in off the bench.
Yeah, change of plan, a different game plan. Rog, different game plan. Or, frankly, if there were just more options in the attack. I mean, it's interesting. The point you make is so correct about Alex Morgan. She scored because everybody thought it was going in to Wambach. But what if there was that muscle confusion with every defence that they play against? They don't know what the option's going to be, what they're going to be. Are they going to be direct? Are they going to be runners off the ball into the box? Are they going to cross it into Wambach? How are they going to go and play? It just is a bit too predictable right now.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember Romelu Lukaku at West Brom?
Yeah.
They'd have Shane Long. Exhausted defenders, and then around 70 minutes, they throw on Romelu. He'd always score against exhausted defenders. The US should have Alex Morgan, Sidney Leroux, run the defenders ragged, mm-hmm, have Abby come on just to knock him out.
Frankly, England did that quite effectively yesterday. I thought Mark Sampson had a great game as coach, bringing in Jill Scott late in the game. Pretty much exactly the same game plan, Rog.
Oh, but a win felt good, but then you start to think it was 11 versus 10 for 45-ish minutes. The US created little. And then you say to yourself, I've got to stop thinking. At JM Reedy tweeted us, I think Jill Ellis watched Game of Thrones and thought, I like how that Stannis fellow sticks to a plan.
Yeah.
So respect to Colombia,
yeah,
who did make it hard to tell it was 10 versus 11 for much of the game. They played like 10 best friends
in that
second half, David.
They really did. It was nice.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of negativity about their play. A lot of American fans perceived diving, time wasting. I thought they were magnificent.
No, I think they had terrific, terrific ball skill. And if this game really, really, the women's game takes hold in Colombia, and frankly, amongst the other Common Bowl nations, Rog, there could be some incredible competition coming from down there.
RR Richard tweeted us to say, Jill Ellis has me longing for a creative tactician like Tony Pulis or Sam Allardyce. I've got to say, for the life of me, I can't imagine what Heather O'Reilly has done.
Yeah.
To be one of only three outfield players to take. Watching her play, she'd bring the comfort on the ball and the experience to do what it takes to get a win. She's our American Shinji Kagawa. Free AO. A letter to us, David, from Rob Leacock.
Yes, Rob writes, is the US women's national team in danger of becoming the 2014 Brazil men's World Cup team of the 2015 World Cup? High expectations, lots of hype, shaky slash inconsistent play, unrealized potential, all building toward an epic collapse. Don't get me wrong, I don't want this to happen, Rob. I don't know, look, on the one side, I think Jill Ellis is taking a lot of criticism and I'm not sure she has the players to play a much more creative system, whether or not she plays Heather O'Reilly off the bench. And the US are going into the quarterfinals. They're playing against China, a team who I really expect them to beat. But yes, they've got a semi-final against Germany, exactly the round where Germany did demolish Brazil at the World Cup. And Germany do look like the class of the tournament.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I try and be positive, Dave. You train me well. The US found a way to win while playing badly. Becky Sauerbrunn and Julie Johnson again stood tall.
Yeah, but they were magnificent.
Limiting Colombia to two shots on goal and just three Riverdance jigs on the edge of the area. But then the negatives film. They're papering over the cracks with these wins. They're masking a glaring problem. After the game, Carly Lloyd said, it's going to come. We still haven't peaked yet. And I don't know what the... I don't see a progression, David, with this team yet at all. I mean, it's like Einstein said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And this is a tough one because the results are winning results. But you don't have to be a prophet to feel there's an end of the road somewhere just around the corner. China await. They're pacey. They're organised. They're young, especially defensively. They're no Germany, France or Japan. They will come. And we're going to play them without Lauren Holliday and Megan Rapinoe. Massive loss because the pair have either scored, assisted or drawn penalties on four out of the five US goals at this World Cup. We won. Let's celebrate. Self-doubt still reigns, which is a very, very English feeling. Get used to it, America. Mm-hmm. I just say Dosa Cero has never felt so inconclusive. Being a football fan at the same time demands cognitive dissonance. So go, go, go. And the true highlight of the game for me, Davo, Dr. Joe just killing it in his bunker.
Oh, in the bunker. In the bunker, Rog.
I think bunker there's a euphemism for sex den.
Oh, terrible things have happened down there.
Some
Rog.
Kind of a room with FBI perps posted all over. We'll have to ask Rob Stone about it. At Kyle is Gibson said, the ref bunker looks like McGonaghy's hotel room in True Detective. Dante Florence thinks it's a mind map wall that Kerry Matheson would be proud of. We need to ask Rob
about
that.
I think it's
that.
An extension of Abby Wambach's mind. Because basically, you never go to Dr. Joe and he says, well... Yeah, that was a fair call against the Americans. I think he knows who's signing the paychecks, Dr. Joe.
Dr. Joe is inside of Abby Wambach's mind.
Yeah, like it's inside basically, out. It's how she perceives refereeing decisions.
Dr. Joe is Abby Wambach's sadness.
I think it could well be, Rog.
Let's talk about happy things.
Well, the US Women's National Team's quarterfinal, Rog, I should say, against China will be in Ottawa Friday at 7:30 p.m. on the Fox family of networks.
It's a very nice family.
In other World Cup action, we've already talked about this, Roger. Stunning long-range strike from England.
Take that, mixed history.
Lucy Bronze gives the Lionesses a 2-1 win over Norway. They're going to take on host Canada in the quarterfinals, and they're playing beautiful football, Rog.
How American was England's win?
They were so American. I've never been more American, Rog.
1-0 down, playing terrible, dependent on our goalkeeper, Karen Bardsley, to keep us in the game. Yeah. And then somewhere, Dave, defiance, courage and belief.
Yeah.
The English men, and I don't just mean our football team. I'd include myself completely in this critique.
Yeah.
That we utterly lack. Step up, Lucy Bronze.
Yeah.
The best English name since Billy Ocean.
Yeah.
And what a stunning goal, Dave. And when I watched it, I honestly thought it had been made with Jurassic Park-esque special effects. It was Phil Jagielka-esque. It was that good, Dave. What's it like watching English shirts on the field, joyful?
Well, it was that. It was the joyfulness of those ladies and the way they played football. The guts. I mean, honestly, that Lucy Bronze goal was the result of some really tidy football that they were playing down the right flank and on the edge of the area. And watching a young English manager experiment and tactically change on the fly, I thought his substitutions, we've already talked about Jill Scott coming on, they were just fantastic and a great adjustment. 61-year-old coach of Norway felt that he'd been outcoached. Was very complimentary to Sampson after the
massive
game.
Massive goal scored, not just for football, but for cultural change in England. There's no Title IX tradition in England at all. The Guardian's Louise Taylor wrote a beautiful piece about the Velvet Revolution that's taking place in England as English football fans are starting to watch. Many of them watching their first Women's World Cup are starting to embrace the notion of women playing football. The average attendance at the five-year-old Women's Professional League there is just 892
yeah.
in the eight-team first division. And we hope that that change is happening. Some of the players in that league are earning just $80 a week. And it's fascinating to see the debate take place in the English papers as the journalists grapple with women's football. Just like many Americans watch the World Cup for the first time in 2010, many English journalists are watching the Women's World Cup for the first time. Oliver Holt wrote in the Daily Mail, "Stop trying to belittle the women's game, trying to support a conversation about England's success." Martin Samuel wrote a retort in the same paper. He said, "Pointing out flaws in the Women's World Cup doesn't make you sexist. Men's football can be lousy. And when we have genuine equality, we can say women's football can be too." It is a complex and raw time over there. England now play Canada.
Yeah.
Julie Stewart Binks tweeted, "England's Lucy Bronze told me today on facing Canada, the Queen's on the coin for a reason."
Oh.
Failing Empire trash talk, the best kind of trash talk,
very
David.
Good. Not just England doing well, Rog. Australia upset Brazil and Malta over the weekend 1-0 to claim their first ever knockout round World Cup win. The Matildas play the winner of Japan and the Netherlands. That match takes place later today. It occurs to me, Rog, that, you know, I don't want to sound all Lord Grantham, but the fact that there are four English-speaking nations going into the quarterfinals of the World Cup, I'm including Australia here. Holland would be the fifth English-speaking nation, Rog. But it's important for the importance and global coverage of women's soccer and profile of women's soccer. You know, there is this axis of international sports journalism and coverage, which is the US, which is England, and which is Australia. And if the sport is doing well in those countries, I think it's very, very good for the future of the women's game.
Massive congratulations to all Australian GFOPs.
Yeah.
Your Matildas, they've been magnificent. And their 1-0 victory over Brazil, first tournament win ever for them over Martyrs Mob. It was a shock, but it was no surprise to anyone who's watched them play.
Incidentally, Rog, the fourth quarterfinal contains plenty of previous as well. Germany taking on France. It's going to be a cracking game of football, Rog. On to Copa America. South America seeing its share of international football as Copa America enters the quarterfinals. Neymar will miss the rest of the tournament thanks to a four-game suspension stemming from his behaviour in Brazil's 1-0 group stage loss to Colombia. With the game drawing to a close, he went all Cesc Fabregas and booted the ball at Colombia's Pablo Amaro before berating the referee and delivering a half-assed, let's face it, headbutt to Jason Murillo.
He went all Clint Dempsey. It's alleged he said to the referee as he walked off, "You want to make yourself famous at my expense, you son of a beep."
Wow.
I mean, you're not alone in the subplots which have dominated this. Arturo Vidal crashing his Ferrari after drinking unbelievably heavily. Neymar left the Brazil camp this morning, so he wouldn't be a distraction for the rest of the tournament. His team, take note, Abby Wombat, they play much more liberated football without him. They tend to rely too much on him when he's in there, and they hope that he'll make something happen. Now they live and die as a collective with 31-year-old Robinho. Remember him, Dave?
Oh, yeah, very well.
Neymar, before there was a Neymar.
Yeah.
Leading the attack. You've got Messi trying to break Argentina's trophy drought. Colombia trying to spark Radamel Falcao's dead batteries back to life. It's a tournament awash with narrative. Great piece by ESPN's Miguel Delaney on how South American football, which used to be flair and touch, is now responsible for the best, most versatile, rugged defenders in the game. Hmm. Otamendi, Garay, Zabaleta, Godin, Jimenez, and Rios. The rest of the world is watching that tournament like we're watching the Women's World Cup.
Yeah. Brazil will play Paraguay in the quarterfinals, Rog. The other quarterfinals, Chile versus Uruguay. Very good tournament for the Guays. Bolivia versus Peru and Argentina versus Colombia.
All on the BN family of networks.
Yes.
With Ray Hudson just in overdrive.
Yeah, magisterial. In Premier League news, Rog, after 11 years in West London, Petr Cech is set to leave Chelsea for Arsenal. Numerous outlets report a deal for the 33-year-old Czech Republic international is inevitable. Reports put the transfer fee at $17 million, around £11 million.
Massive for Arsenal. Truly world-class goalkeeper for them for the first time since Jens Lehmann. Cech could make his debut against Chelsea in the Community Shield.
Oh, the big one.
John Terry said Cech may be worth 15 to 20 points for Arsenal this season.
Arsenal's title to lose.
Yeah, when you think they ended 12 points behind Chelsea, that is Mourinho psyops.
Arsenal's title to lose. Already clear favourites for next season. Got to win it at this point with Czech. Seems that this deal was made by Roman Abramovich over the wishes of Jose Mourinho, which is very interesting. But who can deny Czech a chance to play regular first-team football?
He's
given
team.
So much service to this club, Rog. It'll be interesting playing behind Arsenal's back line, Rog. Real Madrid and Spain star Sergio Ramos could be heading to Manchester United. Louis van Gaal is said to be targeting the 29-year-old defender as part of a deal for David De Gea in what for world we live. Rog.
Ramos has 2 years on his contract. This to me is just amazing paper talk. Smacks of players' agents eager to pick up the pace of a contract renewal. He's also been linked with Barcelona. By the way, my favourite bit of news out of United. United have agreed to sell supersized extra, 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 extra large versions of their new kit to please fans who've said, they're too small for me. It's a blatant effort to catch the eye of average-sized Hull City fans looking to resuscitate a Premier League rooting interest. Same article, by the way, revealed Tottenham have the biggest jersey in Premier League football. Huh. Extra, 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 extra large.
Wow.
By the way, if you take extra, 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 extra large, I just say as a human service, I don't think football jerseys are really... They're just not the look.
The right fashion choice not, for you.
And this coming from a man who's been banned by his wife.
Yeah.
From wearing football jerseys because she told me that I put on 20 years and £40 and I wear them, so I'm not averse.
Talking of Tottenham, Rog, DeAndre Yedlin looks poised to spend the season away from Spurs on loan. He's been linked with newly promoted Norwich City as well as Championship sides Derby and Bolton. Is this a good thing for DeAndre Yedlin?
I do think it's a great thing. He joined in January. He's had just one 12-minute sub appearance, 3 under-21 Premier League run-outs with the reserves. They signed Kieran Trippier, Spurs, from Burnley.
Oh, he's a good player.
So he's been linked to loans Yedlin with Premier League newcomers Norwich, Derby and Bolton in the Championships. All of this is good, man. Yedlin's performances against Netherlands and Germany have shown that he can compete. He just needs to play and gain the experience to smooth off his rough edges and excel at the highest levels.
In Scottish Premier League news, Rog, we don't say that very often.
We don't say enough.
Glasgow-based Partick Thistle have unveiled the most bizarre football mascot of all time.
That's brilliant.
The David Shrigley designed Kingsley.
Can you describe him? It's been an internet sensation.
How do we describe Kingsley?
Terrifying children is the general consensus about it. It's an amazing piece of work.
It's a mascot in keeping with the kind of people who roll up on the terraces, one assumes,
the
at Partick Thistle. That they want an intimidating mascot, a mascot that can stride onto the field and intimidate opposing fans. And I think David Shrigley, the famous Scottish animator cartoonist, sort of pulled this off, Rog.
Shrigley did it. But this is another product of American involvement in British football, which I think is actually quite brilliant. It was financed by Mike Wilkins. Many of you will know him as a part owner of the Golden State Warriors. Mm-hmm. Huge admirer of the design work of David Shrigley, as are we, Turner Prize nominated artist. Wilkins said in an interview, I asked Shrigley what his favourite club was. He answered, Partick Thistle. It was the first time I'd heard those two words put together. All I'll say is about Kingsley, the world's most terrifying mascot. 3 million retweets, Dave. American coverage of Partick Thistle on CNN. I don't know when Partick Thistle will last on CNN. To me, this is the best thing to happen to Scottish football.
Yeah.
Since Stephen Naismith's parents put on the Barry White album, drank half a bottle of Bailey's and made sweet, sweet love to consummate little Stephen.
Oh, you'd need sweet love to consummate something that beautiful.
I've said this when John Oliver talked about mascots. We need a mascot for the second series of Men in Blazers, David.
Yeah, a raven of some kind.
You thought we should have a goldfish suit.
Well,
made.
Just because I don't remember anything, I have the memory of a goldfish.
I think we should have a cat.
Such as I don't remember us having that conversation about John Oliver's mascots.
We should have one of Chuck Blazer's cats
as
our
good.
Mascot. Just a beautiful cat outfit.
An apartment full of cats as our mascot. It would be very, very good. Roger. Okay, in an MLS, Major League Soccer has suspended Seattle Sounders Clint
Dempsey. Shame, shame, shame.
3 games after he ripped up referee Daniel Radford's notebook during a US Open Cup tie against the Portland Timbers last week. Dempsey was reacting to Radford's decision to send off Michael Azira in extra time. A 3-game suspension conveniently means Dempsey will be available for the US Men's National Team Gold Cup game, which begin July 7th.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a wild one. The Professional Soccer Referees Association, not too pleased.
Yeah.
Because according to US Soccer's
Well, we need to get Dr. Policy, Joe in on this. Need to go to the bunker.
It's a minimum 6-game ban, mm-hmm. which would have, as you say, taken him out of the Gold Cup. Yeah. I just say, he's a league marquee player.
Yeah.
The MLS paid a fortune for him to come back as US captain.
Yeah.
The league is struggling to grow a rating at a time when the Women's World Cup is pulling huge ratings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, MLS, very pragmatic. They need Dempsey. They need him very badly on the field. What was going on in his mind, we'll never know, though.
Yeah, Don Garber, though, is pro-notebook, Rog. He doesn't like seeing damage come to a notebook.
Oh, it was the kind of performance that makes even the likes of Pablo Sandoval say, what the heck?
Italy and Juve midfield maestro Andrea Pirlo attended a Yankee game Saturday night with Man City chief executive Ferran Soriano, GFOP, sparking talk of an impending move to the Bronx-based outfit. Pirlo in New York City playing for NYCFC, Rog, with Mix and the English Muffin. Can't wait.
I just say, Andrea Pirlo moving to New York City is the best thing to happen to this city since Piers Morgan got out of it. I mean, cynics would say he's another aging superstar lining up alongside Frank Lampard and David Villa, which is not what NYCFC actually need.
Yeah.
They cry out for a holding midfielder to give shape and shield. The excellent Graham Parker wrote a piece in The Guardian, maybe they need Kyle Beckerman. But anyone who's watched Pirlo play over the last 15 years or so knows this is a man with vision, spatial awareness and a unique suaveness and the notion it's a once in a lifetime combination to watch him play. I interviewed him 5 years ago when he just signed for Juve. I'll say this about him. He spoke about his life and career with the poetry one would expect him to, Dave. How do you say panic room in Italian?
Camera di panico. Something like that.
One of my favourite quotes ever, he said.
If I look in the mirror when I get up or before going to bed at night, I see a man of average ugliness, with stubble, an unruly mane of hair, a squint nose, slightly protruding, ears and bags under my eyes, but I also see a man who's completely happy with the figure staring back at him.
Oh my God, he's amazing.
He is, he's amazing. He's the most interesting man in the world, Rob.
At CFC504 tweeted us to say, just another bearded Brooklyn hipster in a wine bar.
Yeah, he's better than a Brooklyn hipster. Our guest today, Rog, is the man captaining Fox's Women's World Cup soccer coverage as lead studio analyst. Oh, he's grown, Rog, he's grown. But we're convinced he's just passing time before announcing his 2016 presidential bid, God willing.
Stoner for Prez, hashtag.
We welcome to the pod a former All-Patriot League footballer,
Chicken
the
legs.
One and only Rob Stone. Welcome back, Rob.
You know, not just anybody can be All-Patriot League, all right? It's the few. It's the elite in American soccer.
The elite in the All-Patriot League.
Absolutely, my friend.
Rob Stone, you should have your own theme music when you come on this show.
Yeah.
We are on.
You know what? Why hasn't that been created yet? There's actually a radio station down in Houston that does Drive Time Sports, and one of my longtime high school buddies, Sean Pendergast, does it. And they created intro music for me when I come on and join him. And
what is it?
It's very WWE centric.
Well, as we've said before, no one
strong undertones, a lot of Vince McMahon type characteristics to it. It's wonderful.
No one walks and talks on a link like Rob Stone.
Nobody. Let's start with a big question every Women's World Cup fan is asking. How is the Fiat 500X crossover?
It drives. It handles so well. Or so I've been told by our sales department.
We're Team Mini over here. We want to congratulate you on the fantastic job you're doing. Can you give us, I mean, you are omnipresent. You're always so well polished. Can you give us a sense of your average day and how you're holding up through this marathon campaign of broadcasting?
All of us, not just me, are holding up so well. It's been managed tremendously by those above us. And I'm not BSing you guys. Like it's a real treasure to get into work. It's not like this baton march walking down the street to get to the set for another set of three games or two games.
UEFA Champions League baton march?
No, that's more Europa League.
Okay,
we have the march for the Europa League. Yeah, it's called No Shave Thursday when it's Europa League. We Warren Barton and I, we pretty much wake up and say, you know what, today we're not shaving. unfortunately, I could do that for about a month and nobody would notice. But, no, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I love seeing the growth in this game, particularly on the women's side. You know, we are, in the United States, we are now officially a World Cup nation. I remember back in the early 90s when I covered World Cups, everything hinged on the United States. And our executives would sit there and worry over every pass and turnover and shot and injury because they knew their ratings would suffer if the U.S. departed the World Cup. And I think clearly that's not the case anymore with the Men's World Cup. It's still here to an extent on the women's side, but we're seeing remarkable numbers for the other games. I mean, our American numbers are blowing our expectations out. But all these other random games that, you know, I think we're some people would just kind of look at like, oh, there's another throwaway match, are getting viewers. And we are a World Cup nation right now back home in the U.S. And it so excites me. And the U.S. team has, boy, they've given us a lot to talk about and a lot of drama already.
You are presiding over huge panels of pundits. I mean, they are... I've been to small.
I counted 16 people
I've
on the panel.
I've been to smaller orgies, Rob. Well, watching you in action is a bit like seeing Chief Justice Roberts preside over the Supreme Court. A better looking Chief Justice
people,
Roberts
with more people.
Yeah,
but you're right. It is a lot of people. And our dear friend Bill Simmons sent me a wonderful email the other day, and he said, "Can we just give Stoner the Gene Rayburn microphone right now and just make the set two tiers?" And make it like...
it's like the match game. It's like the match game. Like the match game.
Yeah.
That's
just
hilarious.
It's like one of those great Saturday Night Live skits where you spend half the show introducing the pundits and the talent.
A listener at Kevin W. Butler tweeted, "If I send Rob Stone a pedometer, can he wear it on set? I desperately need to know the mileage he racks up on a given broadcast day."
I mean, I have a Fitbit. And I do wear it. And our stage manager, Karen, she told me one day she logged roughly 6 miles walking around the set, and half of that is going up and down stairs because our offices are all the way down almost on sea level. And then we go up like 2 levels just to get to the soccer field, and then another kind of junior level to get to the lounge, and then another level and a half to get up to the penthouse.
No wonder Dr. Joe is seeking cover in his bunker.
Oh. Terrible things.
How about the referee?
Terrible.
Bunker, huh? How good
terrible
that?
Things have happened in Dr. Joe's
terrible?
Bunker.
What do you terrible mean terrible? Things. It's glorious.
I don't know what goes on in Dr. Joe's bunker the rest of the time, but I sense that terrible things have happened down there.
No. Dr. Joe's down there with this Cuddy Sark. He's analyzing his forensic official video at every moment. He is there for us. He's in his little bunker. He's got his producer there. He pins out. It's fantastic. I'm not making
honestly,
a joke.
Honestly, when Abby Wambach missed the penalty yesterday, I swear, if we'd gone on Dr. Joe, he could have convinced us that it was actually a goal.
He sends out these profiles analyzing, like, round one analysis of every match official. And then when we know who the officiating crews are for the upcoming game, he's got a document there as well talking about the history of all these officials, what they've done in this World Cup already, and it's amazing information that hardly ever makes air, but when it's needed and it's there, Dr. Joe is there, man. He's a crazy awesome resource and just a wonderful human being on top of that, and you gotta love the referee bunker.
We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you the question that everybody wants to know this World Cup. Mm-hmm. What kind of a doctor is Dr. Joe?
Good question. I had about 5 people ask me that yesterday in our little hotel lounge. I don't know. I'm guessing it's a PhD in, like, kinesiology or something. Maybe psychology. I have no idea.
I thought it was podiatry.
He's a good doctor, and we're running with it.
He went to the same medical school as Dr. Hook, I think. There's been so much football on Fox over the last month. It's been unbelievable. FA Cup, Champions League final, Under-20 World Cup, Women's World Cup. Can you talk about, I mean, you're in the meetings where you're trying to talk about the Fox approach to it. Talk about the stylistic approach that you are taking and shaping up towards football.
Yeah, I don't think there is really that much to it. I know people love to make more of that and like, oh, they've been Foxified and that's how Fox would do things. And I understand that because that's certainly, you know, been the perception in the past, but I think we've really changed that a lot in soccer. You know, I mean, in the end, we're talking about the game, we're being respectful for it, but we're having fun, we're enjoying it. And I think the viewers, much like your viewers, you know, they know you guys are having fun, and they want to be around for that fun. And they want to see the smile and the laugh and the humor while also, you know, being serious to the subject. I think we've done a wonderful job in kind of boosting our image in the soccer world with this presentation of the Women's World Cup. So many people were doom and gloom, and that's the soccer world. You know, I love them and all, but, you know, it's doom and gloom, and it's not ESPN, and it's not NBC. Oh, my God, what is going to happen? They're going to ruin it. I don't think we've ruined it. You know, I think we've done a wonderful job telling the story, showing the pictures that are given to us by FIFA, enhancing those pictures how we can. Our feature unit has been off the charts. I mean, some of the features that we have aired, you know, I've kind of had to hold myself together. They're that powerful, and the pictures are wonderful. And I think we've got a really intelligent group of people to talk about it, whether it's our pregame, halftime, postgame show, or the night show, World Cup Tonight, where, you know, they get a little looser and have more fun with some of the storylines while hitting it as well. Nobody has said anything to me like, Rob, you need to do this more or do this less. It's been created over a couple years, and nobody has jumped in to interject their two cents because they like the direction we're going.
So let's go to the soccer. So what has surprised you this tournament? I know you've seen a lot of women's soccer. I know you've seen the U.S. women's national team play a lot. But what surprised you? What has really entertained you about this tournament?
I love the fact that there were so many debutantes here at the World Cup, and people were worried that the field was diluted and we're not going to see as much talent. We're going to see some blowouts. And yes, we saw them. We see them at every Women's World Cup. They're going to be out there. But, you know, the fact that we give the Thailand of the world and Ivory Coast an opportunity to grow. And I love the fact that, you know, debutantes, you know, three of them made it to the round of 16. You know, that's showing that this sport continues to grow. I love the fact that rivalries have been built up and have been further enhanced here as well. I enjoy the fact that there's upsets. You know, people were cheering that Brazil lost. I thought it was, you know, a great case to show that so many other countries are catching up to these world powers. But the one surprise also for me has been, you know, the U.S. You know, in the end, that's really where most of our focus is. And I think everybody is so enthralled with that 1999 Women's World Cup. And that's the U.S. team that so many people, at least our age, expect to see, and that's not what we're getting from the U.S. You know, this is a defensive team and not an offensive team, which kind of throws a lot of people off, but there's still a generation of young kids out there who really don't know the 99ers. You know, they might know who Mia Hamm is, but I don't know if they could all recognize her, and the Julie Foudies and the Brandi Chastains of the world and the people that, you know, we relate to. And then there's these young kids out there with their Alex Morgans and Abby Wambach and Sydney LaRue's, and this is the new generation that they're, you know, defining their soccer culture with. And the last thing is, man, God bless America. You know, American fans, and I know you guys saw it last year in Brazil, they travel for this tournament. They come out and they make this tournament. And without the U.S. presence here in Canada, the World Cup would have been missing a huge, huge vibe. And Friday in Ottawa with the proximity, and there on that East Coast, I think it's going to be another massive turnout. But when the U.S. Yeah. plays here in Vancouver, guys, I mean, it was red, white, and blue all over the streets to the point I was almost a little embarrassed. You know, people were chanting, and the national anthem is being sung, and I'm like, we're in somebody else's country. But keep doing it. It's the American soccer fan and the growth of that population and the culture of it, it continues to amaze me. And every time I think, well, this is it. This is as good as it's going to get. This is as big as they can grow. They find another event, and they take it over, and they hijack it, and they embrace it. And the people in that host country end up embracing our American soccer
popular. Just wait till they invade the 2018 World Cup, Rob.
I was actually thinking that this could, of course, be a precursor to an actual invasion of Canada.
We're going to ask you this. Who's going to win the World Cup, Rob? Yeah. We know you already know. Mike Tirico knew at the Men's World Cup. He got the notes from FIFA.
Yeah.
Who is going to win the 2015 Women's World Cup, Rob? Just give us a hint.
My guess is Germany. If they can get by France, I don't fully believe in the U.S. I believe in them up to the semifinals, and then I'm going to get really worried. But the German power, You know, they've demolished teams they were supposed to demolish. They've been in battles. They've had players with multi-goal games. They just seem to be kind of on this mission and executing their plan so far. France, maybe they're building their way back up after that stumble versus Colombia. But every time you watch the Germans, I think people grow a little bit more fearful of them if they're the opposition, and they have kind of earned this power, this badge here in Canada that they're the country to beat. And if you're going to win the World Cup, it's got to go through them. It doesn't go through the defending champs, Japan, at all. They're just kind of, oh, by the way, we're still here, and not scoring a lot and not allowing a lot. But I don't think anybody fears the Japanese. It's the Germans that people are running from right now.
All of this, obviously, is just a stepping stone for you. We're big boosters of the Rob Stone for President campaign.
Yeah.
We just purchased stonerforprez.com.
Yeah.
Prez, P-R-E-Z.
We also just opened a Twitter account for your Fitbit.
Yeah. We did. who would you want to choose as your running mate? Your Geraldine Ferraro.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
We've given it a lot of thought.
We've had some good ideas out there, you know, from Bob Lee to Dr. Joe to Alexi to Winalda. I mean, I think all of these people have a role in my cabinet somewhere.
Yeah.
Bob's the general, so I'm just kind of letting Bob run whatever Bob wants. Very Dick Cheney-esque, you know, whatever you need.
It would be a lot like Dick Cheney as well.
Some motherfucker getting shot.
Alexi, I think I might put him as like Secretary of Education.
Wow.
Just to kind of straighten everybody out over there.
Interesting.
Maybe art. You know what? Secretary of Arts in Education.
Interesting.
That's what I would put him in. I'd put Eric as my Secretary of Rabble Rousing.
Oh, and sweater wearing. He loves a sweater. He loves a summer sweater. Eric Winalda.
I still don't know what the genesis of the sweater was. I look at it every day. I'm like, where did this come from? Where do these appear from? Is there like a sweater bunny farm in the corner of our wardrobe department, and they repopulate themselves?
I tweeted about this, but I don't know what the borders are on sweater season for Eric Winalda. I don't know when he says, okay, sweaters, it's not sweater time of year, and when it's like he seems to be a year-round sweater wearer.
Yeah, but and they're long sleeve sweaters too. They're not like
these are not singlets. These are not gilets.
So all in.
I need a VP. I do need one.
Who is Rob going to be weak with the electorate? You know, who are going to have some problems with a stoner presidency? I mean, I know he has become more statesmanlike during this World Cup, but I think people think he's too youthful. He's too young. He needs some experience. He needs some more sage advice.
Yeah, yep.
That's why I'm leaning more.
I agree.
Bob Lee.
Bob Lee will bring you the South.
Yeah, he'll bring you the South.
See, Bob is vice president to nobody. You know, Bob is...
No, Bob is gonna. Bob is gonna.
I would be reporting to Bob if I was president.
It is true, or Bob might just be president after 6 months. He may challenge you to a duel, and you may be
finished. That's the thing that I'm worried about. Yeah. So it's not that I want to.
So who else could bring you that experience?
I want to feel comfortable every day in my throne.
Yeah. Well, then Dr. Joe. Then we've got to go, Dr. Joe. Brings you the experience, a bit more education, probably.
I think.
No disrespect to Colgate.
You're right, and Dr. Joe would be very grateful of that position.
Yeah.
He would do what he could to protect me.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think the cards are starting to lean towards Dr. Joe. Plus, he's got a vicious side to him that nobody knows about. So once those doors are closed...
We know about it. It's pretty clear. I think doing the nation's duty is the only thing that could tempt him out of that sex den, Rob.
Rob, thank you so much. We're going to be watching the last round of 16 game today as we pod, moving into the... quarterfinals very, very shortly. Amazing tournament. Good luck to all of you up there.
Thank you, guys.
Please send our best to everyone up there at Fox. Amazing work to watch.
I will. We think of you guys daily.
Thanks, Rob.
Oh, what a man, Rog.
He's more than that, David. I've got to say, he's one of the loveliest...
What, he's all Patriot League,
Rog. He's one of the loveliest gents in broadcasting.
We do, we love him.
And he deserves every success.
He's having a moment. There's a Rob Stone moment going on in American sports broadcasting.
And hopefully that moment will last for years.
On to the Ravens, Rog. Our first Raven from Chris Munstock. I was recently in attendance at an American cricket, he puts in parentheses, baseball game, and enjoyed some beverages. As the game dragged, a relief pitcher walked towards the mound. I promptly gave him the double wanker gesture to welcome him. I was immediately reprimanded by a nearby steward and was threatened with expulsion for any future incidents. My question is this. What are the key differences between English and American sporting culture? Why am I not allowed to demonstrate my double-handed freedom in the States while my colonial cousins are featured on television and lauded for their gesticulations? Is it simply an extension of America's prudish, idyllic ideas of censorship or something deeper in the roots of American competition? My hands wish nothing more to gesture in freedom. could it be the puritanical... You know, the sort of sense of like the onanism. Is it onanism? Is that how you pronounce it?
Onanism.
Yeah. Is it that it's all so wrong and it's the repression? I mean, often people talk to me as like, oh, yeah, we have violence at our American sports. You go and see an Eagles game. Like, this gets nowhere near the violence and the language that takes place every weekend at football stadiums up and down England, Scotland and Wales, Roger.
I mean, I think football culture and American sports culture are moving towards each other, but they're coming from different directions.
Yeah.
English football culture was really cemented in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Television coverage wasn't part of the model.
Mm-hmm.
No one thought about American markets and mm-hmm. China markets. The business model was getting as many bums on seats and filling it with locals. And those locals were very local and they were very parochial and they were very territorial and they loved to fight. They loved the taste of their own blood in their mouth. And football was just an expression of local identity and a release. Hooliganism prevailed. You'd think of nothing of stepping over broken, wounded bodies on the way into the stadium. And then you'd scream obscene, vile chants at opposing fans for 90 minutes. I remember going to a baseball game for the first time. I was 16 and was in Chicago. I went to the Cubs, Wrigley Field and Old Comiskey. I was just blown away by the notion that you could go to sports events with families for entertainment. It was nipple tingling. So the Premier League's kind of moved towards that. But it's like a wolf that's being domesticated into a house dog, tiny house dog, one that Kim Kardashian would pick up an Insta and selfie with, but it's still got primal wolf roots, and the wanker sign is one of those primal wolf roots, Dave.
I would say, though,
bad old days.
I would say Chris Munstock refers to it as American cricket, baseball. You wouldn't see bad behaviour at a cricket game in England. So maybe this is about ball and bat. Maybe it's about that you don't see that kind of behaviour.
That's true.
The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Taylor James Gleeson. Rog, I'm someone who has a deep hatred for my own birthday. Oh, join the club. I have gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure no one other than my immediate family knows when that dreadful day arrives. A couple of weeks ago was the anniversary of my birth, and I was close to accomplishing the immaculate birthday. I was at my grandpa's lake house. He is an aging gentleman who has trouble recalling what day it is. So keeping track of 17 grandchildren's birthdays is not something he puts much effort into. The day was off to a perfect start. No birthday wishes, no candles, no presents, no singing. I was sitting on the dock, basking in the glory of my unrecognized birthday. However, when I returned to the house to whip up a frozen pizza for lunch, my mother had phoned my grandpa and his new wife, and the secret was out. A happy birthday banner was strung up in the kitchen. New wives do that. Accompanied by the top of their wedding cake, which had been frozen almost 3 years ago, and they had forgotten to eat on their first two wedding anniversaries. My perfect birthday had been compromised, and I had to eat cake that tasted like a three-year-old frozen wedding cake topper. That being said, all of the girls I have ever turned out to be serious with in my life have all had one thing in common: a deep love for their own birthday. Many of them refer to their birthday week. It is a quality that deeply bothers me. Many of these relationships have concluded near this aforementioned day or week. I do not always end the relationships, but I believe in many instances they can feel my disdain and things promptly fall apart. I've hit a bit of a bumpy patch with the ladies recently. So I want to know, what is the best way to approach this subject before the actual occurrence of their birthday? Should I just come out and ask, first date style, how do you feel about your birthday? Is this condition something I need to add to my Tinder profile? Do I need to head out to Castle Black and spend the rest of my days on the wall? Any guidance would be greatly appreciated, gentlemen. Courage from the crap part of North Carolina, Taylor James Gleeson. Brilliant, Raven, Taylor.
Oh, life's hard.
Yeah, the birthday week. The birthday week is hard.
We've said before, the world is divided into two kinds of people.
Yeah.
Those who hate their birthday,
yeah,
like us,
mm-hmm,
and those who really... really, really love it.
Oh, love a birthday. Here's my advice.
Yeah.
This is my advice. Make it clear, 4 weeks, 5 weeks out from the birthday actually happening, that you're going to celebrate her birthday with her. So you're going to have a celebration. And assuming this happens on a midweek, you've got two scenarios. This is a midweek birthday scenario. If it's happening on a midweek, celebrate her birthday with her, but then say, and then we're going to go away for the weekend before or after, your choice, and just take her away somewhere. Even if it's just like down the street, one night in a hotel, whatever you want to go and do, just make it a Nando's chicken.
Norwich,
Burnley. Make it a little bit special and give her the weekend as well as the birthday. If it's a weekend birthday, you're in luck, mate, and it should happen, you know, 3 out of every 7
you're
years.
You're such a practical man.
And go, just take her away for a weekend.
You're a practical man.
Turn it into a birthday weekend.
My gut is, don't worry about it. You don't want a long-term relationship with yourself. There's too much self-loathing to have two people who are like you.
Is Mrs. B into her birthday?
She's very into her birthday.
Interesting.
Totally into it.
And how do you handle that with dignity and class?
In a relationship, I've worked out what is important is knowing what you do want, what you really need.
Yeah.
And everything else you just kind of live with. But you don't want to marry yourself or have a long-term relationship with yourself. Most long-lasting relationships are based on two people who are very different, who love and respect those differences. That's why I love Mick Diskerud's goal for the US last week. A haired man receiving the ball from the bald.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
They'd be the perfect couple for me.
Yeah.
The key, the most important thing is never marry yourself.
Bradley's not a birthday man. Mix, I think he likes his birthday week. He likes a birthday week, Rog. Okay, your weekend looks like this in the Women's World Cup, China versus the United States of America, Friday, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, England, Rog, versus Canada.
There must be some typo there.
That's going to be a good game of football, Rog. 7:30 p.m. both those games on Fox's family of networks, and in an MLS and NYCFC versus and New York Red Bull Sunday at 5 p.m. on ESPN.
Fantastic.
The many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, Rog. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, Fridays, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting into the Emporium this week, Roger?
A book, The Nearest Thing to Life,
yeah,
by James Wood. The academic, literary critic, New Yorker writer. It's part memoir, part philosophical exploration of why we need art in general and literature in particular. To read fiction, he says, is to have non-actionable thoughts. We assert the humane, non-religious right to separate thinking from doing. It is dense, black belt stuff, but it's worth it for the pearls of wisdom like this George Eliot quote. Art is the nearest thing to life. It's a mode of amplifying experience and extending our contact with fellow men beyond the bounds of our personal lot. If you substitute football for the word art there, he's just explained to me why I watch soccer.
Oh, beautiful, Rog. It's tennis season, Rog. I'm playing, remarkably, more tennis this season than I am golf, which is very, even though I'm about to depart after our Pamplona expedition for a massive golf trip around the UK, but I'm playing a lot of tennis, and I looked at my collection of tennis bags the other day, and I just thought they're not good enough, just not good enough. And so I went online and I found myself.
Do you have a closet full of tennis bags?
I've got four of those big multi-racket holders tennis bags. I have different rackets depending on what mood I am and what kind of shoulder pain.
I still play with a Dunlop Max Play.
Well, I do have some Dunlop rackets, but they're not Max Plays. Depending on how bad my shoulder is. But I must say, the king of tennis bags, Rog, as I've discovered, is the Wilson Premium Leather 6-Pack Tennis Bag, black brown. They made this a few years ago, made it in a few different color combinations. This is the only one you seem to be able to get on Amazon. It's expensive, but this is my feeling with luggage. You buy luggage that can last you forever.
Luggage for life.
This is Lord Grantham rules. You don't buy luggage that you can last for you like 1 or 2 years, then you're going to throw out and look crappy at the back of your closet. Buy luggage that lasts forever. In the long run, it's much, much cheaper. The Wilson Premium Leather 6-Pack Tennis Bag in black/brown. Other ways to connect to us, Rog. We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes.
It's unlistenable.
Amazon and Google Play. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league. USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, Rog. Men_in_Blazers. MenInBlazers.wikispaces.com. A wonder of the modern world. MenInBlazers.com is our website, Rog. You can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, there, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. You can follow us on Twitter, at Rog Bennett, at MenInBlazers, at Embassy Davies, on Instagram, at MenInBlazers, at Embassy_Davies. On Facebook, but not as of yet on Snapchat.
Soon.
Okay. We've got a subreddit, Rog, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. And you can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. You can send your ravens, which now has an unsend feature as well on Gmail, which producer Lexi is very excited about Gmail's new unsend feature. I wonder why. And you can send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, mixed discarood.
Is that your analysis?
Lean to linen.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung fu fighting America. Kung fu fighting Abby Wambach.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Davo. USA, USA, USA. Thank you, London.